Welcome to the Fantasy Blackboard, your home for all of your fantasy football rankings, tips, and discussion. Class is in session. Here are your hosts, Jonathan and Zach.
Okay, welcome to the Fantasy Football Blackboard. I'm Zach Helbling, and I'm joined with my good friend,
Jonathan Cafardi, baby.
There we go. I always wondered how to say your last name. We are the Fantasy Blackboard. We're not going to do too much of an introduction here, but you know, we hope you guys follow us on all our socials. We are at FF Blackboard on Twitter or X, and on Instagram.
X.
Sorry. And anyways, we're going to jump into some breaking news. Well, we're a little bit past the breaking news point, but a couple of big headlines from around the NFL. We have Ezekiel Elliott with a one-year contract and Dalvin Cook with a one-year contract.
Yes. So immediately you have some fallout with those signings. There's a lot of talk about where Zeke was going to go. He wasn't getting the money he wanted to get. Dalvin Cook, I think, was kind of always perceived as the most standout talent still available in the market. I think some of the other guys are perceived as kind of washed. You have Zeke and Lenny and Kareem Hunt, all kind of perceived as being either over the hill or really close to it.
Right.
You know, for me, Zeke, that's more or less just an immediate impact on what Ramondre has been looked at as in redraft formats, and it might hurt his value a little bit when it comes to the goal line, I guess I would say.
I think it actually hurts his, you know, overall value a lot for me. I was pretty high on Stevenson, and I was really looking forward to him being kind of the feature back there because there was always somebody else kind of taking a couple carries away from him here or there. So, yeah, I actually dropped him down my rankings a little bit. Just because, like you said, I do think he's going to lose some of those goal line touches because that's kind of Zeke's MO right now as he's getting older. He doesn't really have any, like, injuries to, or, like, past injuries to worry about. Like, he's not injury prone.
He's healthy. I just think he's kind of washed.
No, for sure.
And,
no, exactly.
Know, but we also know the reputation that goes with a Belichick offense.
Yep.
It's commonly a committee. You know, when Damian Harris left, he went to Buffalo. That's a whole different conversation. But, you know, I think a lot of people were really hopeful that, you know, those guys behind him prior to the Zeke signing really weren't, you know, garnering much interest. They weren't guys we were concerned about, you know, really threatening Ramondre's role as a feature back. I still think Ramondre is probably still that borderline RB1. Mm-hmm. He's going to have pass catching upside. I don't know how much Zeke is going to play into that, but he's going to definitely take some carries, you know, some overall volume away, but he's going to take some of those goal line carries. So, yeah, right off the bat, you got Zeke going to New England, so that was definitely super interesting. The bigger one for me is the Dalvin Cook signing with the Jets. Clearly, that team's all in. They have about a two-year window, it looks like, with Aaron Rodgers. So,
And Aaron Rodgers wanted Cook on the team.
Yeah.
And then what's funny to me is as soon as they announced the Dalvin Cook signing, all of a sudden Breece Hall is practicing today.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, I mean, Breece Hall coming off the knee injury. I mean, I think what you see in New York is really reminiscent of what Tom Brady did in Tampa Bay for a couple years. Really, that small window going all in, you know, worry about it 2-3 years down the line whenever those contracts, you know, it's only a one-year deal for Dalvin Cook. So there's not a ton of risk. I think the metrics kind of showed he was still a higher-end RB last year in Minnesota. That was a different scheme last year.
Oh, totally.
It wasn't the same team, but he still had, you know, the same breakaway, you know, a lot of the same breakaway run percentages and the big play ability. It's just, what does it mean for Breece Hall? I mean, it's just an immediate, you know, he's been going earlier than I've perceived as making a lot of sense anyway in a lot of redraft formats, like in PPR leagues specifically. I just don't. I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about where Breece Hall's going. Dalvin Cook's been consistently like a fifth or sixth round pick before he was even signed. Yep. So what does this do now for their overall values?
Let's talk about that because right now, we were talking before the show here that we need to adjust some of our rankings after this. So before the news, you had Breece Hall as your 12th running back off the board.
I did. Yeah, and that was something I kind of wanted to adjust a little bit anyway, but now with this happening, I mean, it's a multi kind of faceted question. It's number one, it's a committee now. They signed Dalvin Cook for 8.6, I think 7 million guaranteed right off the bat. So like it's a legitimate investment. Right. He's coming into town to take some touches right off the bat, regardless of injury when it comes to Breece Hall. But then you think about the knee injury with Breece, the recovery time, what that usually looks like. Breece Hall just became a fringe RB2 in my mind. So he's going to have to really be faded, I think, in a lot of these redraft leagues. And quite frankly, I'm unless I'm getting one of them at an extreme value, I'm kind of staying away from that Jets backfield right now, because to me there's so much ambiguity.
You got it.
But no, there's just a lot we don't really know about what's going on down there, and until we see more training camp reports, Dalvin Cook hasn't been in a uniform all training camp.
He's still probably another week out from actually practicing.
Exactly. So we don't really know kind of what the usage is going to look like. As we get closer to, week one and so on and so forth, maybe we'll have a clearer perspective on like what that looks like right now. But right now they're going way ahead of where I'm comfortable taking either of them. So,
right. So let's jump back to Ezekiel Elliott here. Now, there was always the chance that he was going to re-sign with Dallas, and that didn't happen. So does that do something for you and Tony Pollard's basically draft stock here?
Tony Pollard's polarizing. I have him really high right now on my list, or at least by my standards. I don't know. When I look at a guy who I don't think really fits that feature back build, theoretically at least from a physical standpoint, he's a little undersized. He's never had a full workload.
Yeah, I mean, he spent most of his career so far as like a change of pace guy.
A change of pace guy, a high efficiency guy, someone who's great in space, and I still think he's going to be all those things. What's interesting in Dallas was I was always expecting that veteran signing, whether that's a Kareem Hunt or, I know they said the Zeke wasn't likely to come back, but, whether that was a Kareem Hunt, whether that was a Dalvin, obviously Hunt's still on the board, and so is a Lenny.
Right. Yep.
So something like that could take away, but ultimately that doesn't really affect his PPR rank for me too much, because I still think what he's going to do well is be a high efficient RB, be somewhere around 200 carries for the year. You know what I mean? Like kind of.
Yeah, and you're
that.
Not afraid of him losing touches to Deuce Vaughn.
Well, he looked great.
He did look pretty good.
He looked awesome. It's just like a little toddler just running around at a birthday party and no one could see him. You know what I mean? But he looked excellent. I mean, he was really in and out, making defenders kind of look foolish. I'm not sold on that uber undersized guy yet. I it's one preseason game. I think we need to temper expectations a little bit. But
for sure.
But no, I think Pollard's. I mean, he's a huge winner here. I think right off the bat you have two major signings, neither of them with Dallas. So I know there's been talks about Kareem Hunt with maybe New Orleans, maybe Indianapolis. Neither one has happened yet.
Imagine if New Orleans gets another running back on that roster.
That's a busy room. Really busy room. And we could talk about that a little bit later on with Alvin. But Pollard's standing tall. He looks great right now. This if anything, it just kind of catapults him a little bit higher, quite frankly. But, to me, it's just the Ramondre impact. I still think he's like that RB1, fringe RB1. But overall.
Sorry about that. Okay. Well, sticking to running backs and news here. We've got J.K. Dobbins off the PUP list and getting ready to get some practice reps in for the first time. And
he plays football?
A little bit of time. Surprisingly, he plays football.
Does he really?
Yeah. He wants money for it.
A lot of it, apparently. Apparently he is not aware of what the running back market is right now.
Especially for guys who have missed, 27 games in
three years? He's missed 27 games in the past three seasons. Came back last year, maybe was a little bit too eager, wasn't looking very good. He actually went under, had another procedure real quickly. And he was much better down the stretch there. He looked like vintage J.K. Dobbins, what we expected him to be when he was drafted out of college. But yeah, I mean, it's good to see him getting some reps with the team. He's kind of polarizing right now because he's kind of one of those middle round RBs that, what's that Ravens offense look like, with Lamar and all these new added weapons, a new OC, what's it going to be for him?
Right.
I still think he's a great talent if he is truly healthy, which it seems like he is. And I think you have the aspect of just he's on the last year of a rookie deal.
Right.
So are they going to run him into the ground? What does that look like?
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, we both have him ranked as our 22nd running back off the board here. And I mean, the reason I have him ranked so low as a starting running back with not a ton of competition behind him. It's like you lose a lot of those goal line touches to Lamar Jackson, and even not even just goal line touches. I mean, he's going to take off.
Yep.
You know, a lot. So,
and he hasn't been super prominent in the dump off game.
No.
When it comes to throwing to the receivers, so
right.
You know.
So yeah, I mean that's one of the few picks we actually, or at least between our rankings that we actually agree on. Like we have the exact same ranking for that. So it's,
yeah. You know. No, I mean I think we're drafting him at that point. If you're getting him in a redraft around like you know low end RB2 range, you're drafting him at his floor, assuming health.
Right.
So that's a great place to take him. You're going to have to take him a little higher in most home leagues, but you know as of right now, you know I think some adjustments are going to happen here. I'll play around with my rankings a little bit since these signings have happened, but also, you know, him being back is a good thing. You know, only 1 week of preseason games has been played.
Yeah, he'll have plenty of time to get up to speed.
Yeah, he has time to get up to speed, and at the end of the day, it's running back. We're not talking about receiver or tight end, some of these other positions that are a little bit more difficult, I think, to, you know, assimilate to. You know, he's a running back. He knows how to play the position. But, at this point, you know, I have him kind of at his floor. That's probably going to move around a little bit, but kind of a mid-range RB2 is probably where I'm comfortable with him at right now.
Now, let's also just throw it out there, since we're new on the scene here, that we are going to mainly be talking in full PPR formats here. So that's basically what we base all of our rankings off of our draft. When we talk about drafts is what we're talking about. We're talking about full PPR drafts here. So just to keep that in mind. And speaking of drafts, let's dive into some draft strategies and how they differ from previous years. Because think about 5 to 10 years ago, especially 10 years ago, how the zero RB draft strategy was like
non-existent.
I mean, it was existent, but it was insane.
Yeah,
like you're really like gambling hard, like with your entire season on that. And now it's like, if you're not drafting zero or at least like hero RB, then you're probably not going to win your league, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, the landscape's changing, right? I mean, I think oftentimes a really common thing you would see is, depending on your draft position, you know, you're doubling up on running backs a lot of the time. You know, first and second round picks are both RBs. But as things have shifted, I mean, I think it's important to identify that while we're talking about fantasy football, it's also important to acknowledge the current state of the real NFL and how things have changed with, you know, we just talked about the recent signings of Cook and Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, these are guys who are prominent featured players for a long time in this league, and they're still in their, I mean, what's Cook, 27? I think Elliott just turned 28. These aren't old men.
right.
This is a position that is being considered now by most NFL teams as, you know, once your rookie contract's done, you're expendable. And that's because the position itself is looked at as something where it's just like, well, anyone can do it almost. And I'm not sure that's entirely fair for the position.
Right.
But things are changing. And now you don't have nearly as many feature roles in the league. I don't think you have as many of those RBs you can look at and think, well, this guy's going to get 70 to 75% of the snap share. He's going to get 300 plus touches. He's a lock for this and that. That just doesn't exist as much. So it puts a higher value on, you know, the McCaffreys and the Ecklers of the world.
Yep.
But now you even have some gray area with the Saquon Barkleys and with the Jonathan Taylor already. You know, Jonathan Taylor's 24 years old, but he's got some mileage.
Right.
And that's how you have to look at it through the lens of what these NFL teams are looking at it as. So, yeah, it's interesting. You're seeing all these early wide receivers, and what's happened as a result is you're seeing just tons of running backs being pushed into the third and fourth and fifth rounds that you may have had to reach on in prior seasons based on how people, you know, looked at it from a scientific, you know, how is the breakdown of the talent? When do I have to take these people? Now you have the quote-unquote dead rounds, the dead zones are actually filled with talented upside running backs. So it's a really interesting kind of shift that's happened in the fantasy landscape.
Yeah, it is crazy because I mean like you just mentioned, like if your first two picks weren't running backs before, you're like behind the eight ball big time and you're scrambling to pick somebody up but you know, now like we were talking before we started recording this, my home league that I run, we switched to keepers recently, and I was asking John his opinion here because I'm keeping Amon-Ra St. Brown and losing a fourth round pick on that. And I'm starting to think like, okay, do I go receiver, maybe a running back in the third, or I go receiver, tight end. I've got Amon-Ra St. Brown in the fourth, and then do I just worry about running back later and just load up on everything else? Because, I mean,
right.
I've never ignored running back so much in my entire life until this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's still important. You know what I mean? You can't overlook the position, but yeah, you really have to ask yourself, for, you know, when push comes to shove, you need to be, have a value-based drafting strategy, I think, personally,
right,
with how the board currently breaks down. And you can't go into something with a preset script or something in mind where I'm going to take this position in this round. No, it really does depend on the trickle-down effect and where these guys are falling. So it kind of breaks the mold a little bit.
Yeah. The way I kind of look at it, and this is my take on it, if people were to ask me, like, if you go zero RB or hero RB, I think if you have, in your first round, if you have one of the top six picks, then you're going for a hero RB strategy there. Like, you can, you know, take one of the big names because there's going to be a couple receivers taken in those first picks anyways. So if you can get CMC, you can get Eckler, you can get Saquon, one of those picks, I'd take them there in the first six picks. And then, you know, you still get plenty of receivers coming back around. But I think if you're picks 6 through 12, you know, wait.
It's wide open.
Just wait.
Yeah. I mean,
just wait.
Well, you also have to talk about the volatility with some of these players. You're looking at Christian McCaffrey, 26 years old, has the injury history that he's had. Mm-hmm. He's burnt people for consecutive years, taking them 101, 102. I don't know if you have any.
I don't
want to
talk about it. I traded. I didn't draft him, but I traded for him. He got injured a week later.
Sure, yeah. And even Austin Eckler, I mean, I understand he's more of the scat back, unique pass catching running back, high efficiency existing running back, but he's 28 years old with a new offensive coordinator. So, that likes to throw the ball. So, I mean, you have to consider these things. Even those guys don't feel as safe, maybe, as some of the past RB, you know, standouts have been. You know what I mean? It's just that it's a completely different landscape. And when you talk about Saquon, I see him go end of the first all the time, beginning of the second. Jonathan Taylor with the contract disputes right now going on in Indianapolis. I mean, you have no idea. There's just a lot of volatility with that position versus wide receiver, where you have a Justin Jefferson, you have a Jamar Chase, you have a Cooper Kupp, a Tyreek Hill, and I can keep going. Steph Diggs, I mean, you can put him into that conversation. He's an outstanding route runner attached to a great quarterback. So these guys, there's a little bit less injury proneness, I would say, at the position. If you're in a full PPR format, which is kind of the context we're talking into, I mean, it's just, these are really, you know, the first round's supposed to be easy. But it's not anymore.
No, it's not.
It's just not as easy anymore.
It's the most anxiety.
Right, and then you throw in the onesie positions. You have Travis Kelce. Well, I've seen him go as early as third overall. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a really interesting conversation. It's a lot of fun, and it's you can't miss those first two rounds. That's the real big thing. So.
Right. So let's while we're talking about first round picks, and we're talking about running backs also, let me get your take on Bijan Robinson, because obviously there's a ton of hype. I'm usually more cautious on this amount of hype on a rookie. I mean, especially with him, you know, first-round pick and haven't seen him play yet. I mean, other than college. So, I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, are you going to take that risk and take him in a first round somewhere? Or
I'm probably willing to take him as early as, like, the mid-first, 7th or 8th overall. I see the freshest legs in the running, if you're talking about running backs. But it's the most easily transmissible position, if you will, from college to the NFL when it comes to, you know, difficulty in learning an offense. Running back is the easiest thing to transition from the NCAA to the pros. It's not like quarterback, even receiver. There can be and tight end's a big one. Oftentimes, you know, we'll probably talk about this a lot, but it takes 2 to 3 years for a tight end to really, you know, come into their own, because it's a completely different type of position in the pros. When it comes to Bijan, first thing you have to look at is situation. I mean, he's going to one of the most run-heavy, run-happy offenses and head coaches you're going to find in the league, behind maybe only the Titans, maybe the Eagles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're right there. He's guaranteed volume right off the bat, which is in a league where now running backs aren't guaranteed that volume as much. Right off the bat, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
I also think he's more of an Ezekiel Elliott prospect comp than a Saquon Barkley comp.
Okay.
I think he's a great all-around back. I don't think he's the athletic you know, the alien type, kind of that specimen that Saquon right. was coming out of Penn State. But Bijan's, I mean, he's immediately in line for a huge workload, a ton of touches behind a line that, if you look at some of the, like, the offensive line, the metrics and the data you can look at from 2022, I mean, Tyler Allgeier ate on that offense, and no disrespect to him, but yeah, but he wasn't remotely the prospect that Bijan is. Which Tyler Allgeier is also probably a really high value handcuff who's going to eat a little bit even with Bijan healthy, because they're going to run so much. That's just, you know, you have to understand that Desmond Ridder, completely unproven. It's a really interesting team because they have the receiving options, but they don't really have the quarterback that they know can facilitate.
Right.
So they're going to run the heck out of that rock.
They're not only going to run the heck out of it, but I also like his pairing with a rookie quarterback, because he's going to be there as a safety valve for dump offs and in a PPR league. I mean, there you go.
And I mean, we've already seen, I mean, you know, training camp videos, you got to take them with a grain of salt. Yep. But
he's
lining
expected
up as a receiver, you know, we've seen the videos, you know, him just absolutely shedding people in one-on-one drills. He's a great athlete. He's a great player. He seems to be highly durable. For our listeners out there, I don't know, like, have you seen the video of him completely getting folded in college?
Yeah.
Completely getting folded and landing on his head, and it felt like his whole back snaps, and he just got up. He just bounced up.
I mean, my spine would be in two pieces.
Sure, yeah, I would have been on a stretcher. I wouldn't be talking here right now, but that was Bijan. He seems like he's built for it. That's kind of the point. And, I'm really excited about Bijan. If I'm in a place in the first round where I know I can double up and get him and then one of the more prominent, you know, PPR receivers early to mid second round, I love that stack.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be able to get our first looks at him this Friday. The Falcons are taking on the Bengals, and head coach Arthur Smith says that Bijan Robinson needs the reps, so they're going to get him out there on Friday. So we'll get our first look at him in actual game speed here in the NFL. We just had a dynasty startup draft, which was lengthy and exciting at the same time. According to all of Jonathan's own research and his own expert opinions, he got 100% on his draft.
Hey, that am I able to do a plug, or do we
go
get sued?
Go for it.
Okay, well, Fantasy Pros,
yeah,
for all those listening at home, said I did a 100. So
they said I got an 87, but
yeah.
They don't understand
above
my
the line.
Strategy.
That's not bad.
They don't understand my strategy.
Yeah,
that's okay.
It's fine.
But no, let's talk about that, because that, I mean, that's totally different. It's a Superflex Dynasty League. It is still PPR, but that puts a way bigger emphasis on quarterbacks, obviously. So we saw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 quarterbacks in the first round, rightfully so. I went with quarterback. I had the 8th pick. I took Justin Herbert. And you picked 2 picks after me. And
I did.
I mean, incredible value. Second receiver off the board, you got Ja'Marr Chase.
At the 110, yeah. So I had Justin Fields staring me in the face, obviously in a super flex league. It's enticing. For me, the way I currently have my rankings drawn up is there's a clear tier break after Trevor Lawrence, just from a stability standpoint. Justin Fields still has a lot to prove.
Yeah.
Not just as a passer, just
mainly
in general. I mean, it's mainly his pass. Of course, we know he's the dynamic athlete and he can run for 1,000 yards and do all those things. That's unbelievable from a quarterback in a redraft league. But when you're talking about the future or the long-term prospects of building a team, I just think there's a lot of unanswered questions, and I'm not sure the arrow's totally pointing up in some of those areas when it comes to Justin Fields. So I decided to go position player in my first 2 picks. No quarterbacks in my first 2 picks. And this was not a third-round reversal Superflex draft either.
Yeah.
So I didn't pick again until the 3-10, and I think it worked out. I got Ja'Marr Chase, and then I took Christian McCaffrey at my 203. And then I got Deshaun Watson, who fell all the way down to the 310, who he's a polarizing figure for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really love seeing him even in my lineup, but at that value.
No, I know.
But at that value, I mean, you commonly see him mid-second, maybe at the latest, a late-second rounder in a super flex format. So to get him at the 310, I thought that came together pretty good.
Yeah, my first three picks, we talked about, I got Justin Herbert at the 1-8, and then coming back around to 2-5, I took Garrett Wilson, and then John's least favorite pick of the entire draft. In the third round, I took Damian Pierce as my first running back.
The 308.
He immediately texted me and said, you care to explain this Damian Pierce pick?
Well, for the people right now, defend your pick.
All right, I'll defend my pick. Now, let's see who is still available that I pass on, because there were some good names. I pass on Nick Chubb, Stevenson, Pollard, Najee Harris. Derrick Henry is still available, but in a dynasty, I didn't really want to take him.
No, I mean, I get that. Right off the bat, you have age. Your advantage. He's two years younger minimum than everybody else.
My strategy going into this draft was I'm going to take proven commodities that are second or third year players for just longevity of my team.
Sure.
So Damian Pierce, last year, Houston offense, absolutely abysmal. I think their offense got a little bit better. I don't think it's going to be entirely a Damian Pierce show anymore, which it was last year, and he definitely hit that rookie wall. So I think that this year he's going to be more prepared for it. I think there's more pieces around him and the team. Let's look at this. So last season, after week, what am I looking at here?
Well, he got a little banged up.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he had an injury. He missed the last couple of weeks of the season.
Sure.
But leading up to that, I mean, he was consistently like a 14, 15 points a week, and
he really blossomed in week three.
Yeah, exactly. But like as a rookie on a terrible offensive team, I was happy with it.
It's an awful offense. A David Mills led. I mean, it was not a good situation. You have a lot of moving parts. So yeah.
I like the age with him. I like the way the offense is trending this year. I think that there's going to be less weight on his shoulders to carry the team. There's going to be more options in the passing game. Obviously, they're not so one-dimensional anymore. So that's why I went with Damian Pierce.
So what do you think the Devin Singletary effect is going to be in that backfield?
0 to none.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Has Devin Singletary hurt anybody else's fantasy production in the past?
I mean, he's garnered a lot of touches in Buffalo. I mean, he's been a guy that
I can't.
Is efficient, is not a standout. He's not but he's taken a lot of touches from other guys in that backfield.
I don't take a ton of stock out of Buffalo's backfield, especially in the past couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody in that running back room really did much of anything.
Sure.
But anyways, that's me defending my pick. That was my thinking in it.
I'm not done.
Okay, go ahead. Continue.
I mean, how much do you think figures into draft capital when it comes to these younger running backs? Because teams are going to be more or less bought in based on how much they invested in them with their draft capital. So you have Damian Pierce, who's a fourth-round pick. Okay. Not a late-round pick, but a fourth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's opportunity for Singletary if he shows out to really erode into that overall touch count for Damian Pierce? Because, I mean, we've seen it. I mean, I know it's a little bit different, but James Robinson was outstanding his rookie year on an awful football team in Jacksonville, the Urban Meyer debacle.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also an undrafted rookie that was signed and just kind of showed out. Do you think the fact that Damian Pierce is more of like that mid-round pick, there's a little bit more investment there, that helps him in that regard? Or do you think that it's just a matter of, hey, he's just significantly better than Singletary at this point? He runs harder. He's more of a feature build.
So, okay, in all honesty, I think that Damian Pierce has more of that feature back build that Devin Singletary does. However, I like Devin Singletary. Well, I'm going to say Devin Singletary really takes some goal line touches away. If anything, I think he's a decent pass catcher. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably more so than Damian Pierce, but.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the third down work might go to Singletary.
And that's fine.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Pierce was not prominent as a pass catcher. But, I think it really just depends on what you're looking for out of him. I mean, he gives you youth. He gives you longevity. you know, in the context of what that looks like for a running back, which there's not a lot of that in general. So he's younger than the other guys that were ahead of him. I do think that's a team that takes a step forward. Maybe it's not a big one, but it's a step forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think the offense has nowhere to go but up, really, as far as improvement goes.
I mean, they have C.J. Stroud. They have some receivers. Nico Collins.
Yeah.
Interesting. John Metchie coming back from what he was going through. Interesting. Tank Dell, so on and so forth. Dalton Schultz, an interesting dart throw late in redrafts at tight end. He could be a safety blanket for a young quarterback over the middle, give you, you know, 65, 70 catches in a PPR league. He could be a nice late-round tight end. But, yeah, no, I agree. I understand the thought process. You went for a lot of sophomores.
Yes.
You know, that was your build. And why don't you walk us through the receivers you got, because this is where your team shines, in my opinion.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so Garrett Wilson, my first receiver off the board in second round. Fourth round, got Devontae Smith, another sophomore. Fifth round, Drake London, sophomore. Sixth round, Christian Watson, sophomore.
Sure.
I didn't take another receiver until the 12th round after that, where I got Mims, and then I'm taking a chance on Odell Beckham. And then after that, there's not much of anything.
Yeah, I mean, really I see the vision, because you also took Jordan Love at 708.
Yes.
Which is a potential stack with Watson. I think that's...
I just think Watson, I mean, hopefully Jordan Love can get him the ball. I just don't know about Jordan Love too much, but I mean, I really like Watson's athleticism. I think he's...
Oh, he's a freak.
He's a freak.
He's a specimen.
And Devontae Smith, I think that more people will be... more teams will be keying in on A.J. Brown this year. I think Devontae Smith gets a little positive regression from that. Not that he had, like, a bad year last year or anything like that, but I just think he's going to find himself open more often than not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they're all great picks. And when you're looking at it, there's different schools of thought when it comes to dynasty football. And I think the thing that we lose a lot of times is that you're still trying to win.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You're playing for a championship. So you see a lot of teams who, day one, their philosophy is, well, I'm drafting for a rebuild. I want to have a young team, and I'm not trying to win year one. But that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. You're giving money to other people at that point.
Like you are just handing other people
money.
Yeah,
I mean, it's...
Yeah, so I drafted with the hopes of having a young team that is at least in the mix to compete every year if everybody hits on their upside that I'm hoping for or reaches their ceiling. Then, you know, I think my team has a decent chance.
Absolutely.
So
I respect it. I think overall your team came out underrated, but there's a lot of potential for the future. So
I think your wide receivers are interesting because.
Okay.
I don't know. It's not what I expected out of you there. So
right.
go ahead. We know you got Jamar Chase. You got the big one right off the top, but
right.
then it
right.
gets.
Yeah. Well, so that was. Part of the philosophy was I have a bona fide top three guy for the next 6 years.
Yep.
At Jamar. I didn't take a receiver again until the 5-10. I took Jerry Jeudy. Now, the thing people forget about Jerry Jeudy is he's 24 years old.
Right.
He's only a year or so older than a lot of rookies.
Yeah.
Christian Watson was an older rookie. Mm-hmm. So I think they're only about a year apart right now. Actually, let me double check that. Christian Watson is currently 24, so they're the same age. However, Jeudy has
one more year.
Two more years of NFL experience than what Christian Watson has. So he immediately inherited a really bad offense and a bad quarterback situation in Denver. I mean, it was a revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's interesting about Jerry Jeudy to me, I think there's a lot of upside. I also think that when he initially entered the NFL – what you heard about often was, well, this guy's route running, I mean, his route tree is outstanding. He's just going to automatically be a top 10 route runner in the NFL. And you heard all these things. Those are very common talking point. And if you actually break down what his success rates have been and what his route tree has looked like, the man's not an elite route runner. That's what we've learned. He has holes in his game.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless, separate from quarterback play, he has had holes in his game. He's also had health concerns. However, last year, the debacle, what happened with Russ in Denver with Nathaniel Hackett, that just absolute hodgepodge of nothingness that took place in Denver. Yeah. I mean, it was a miserable mess. And a lot of that, quite frankly, will be worn by Nathaniel Hackett. But I do think a lot of it fell on Russ.
I mean, rightfully so. It was it was bad.
It was bad, and I mean, sometimes you have to believe the eye test too. Russell Wilson looked bad. There were things on the field sometimes he didn't see it. Maybe it's because he's very small. He's vertically challenged. Maybe he couldn't see over his boys. But
I think it was honestly the first time I ever thought Russell Wilson looked old. And
he did, but the mobility was still there. He still had the athleticism and the arm strength to make those deep throws, which has been his calling card.
It was almost like his reaction time was just too slow.
He just didn't know what he was looking at, is what it. You know, and part of that's sure. It's part of it's the offense.
You think you have your own office, you'd have enough time to watch film and 100% get an idea for what you're looking for.
Yeah, but I think what people miss with all that is that I do believe there's. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Nathaniel Hackett went to Denver because they were trying to make a pitch for Aaron Rodgers last year.
Yeah.
And I think once they made that signing and Rodgers didn't follow, they had to run with it, at least for a little bit. It just wasn't a good fit. Yeah. It wasn't – I mean, they're completely different quarterbacks. You're talking about who Aaron Rodgers has been throughout the course of his career, the play style versus what Russell was in Seattle. They're not the same person. They're just not. They have different skill sets. They excelled in different places. So it wasn't a good fit right off the bat, but – but back to Jerry Jeudy, just what I saw down the stretch from Russ once Hackett was out the door and knowing Sean Payton's history, with the offenses that he's been the head of, what he's done. You think about the Michael Thomas effect, what happened in New Orleans for a long time. A great receiver, but not an all-purpose, just dynamic freak athlete. He was just the guy that was – he played to his strengths, and he was a PPR machine. I think Jerry Jeudy, there's room for that to potentially him to grow into that this year with Russ. And so you combined with the age, you know, you had a lot of the younger guys going ahead of him, like Jackson Smith and Jigba, so on and so forth. But to get Jeudy at the 5'10", just felt like a value pick at that point.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think also, I mean, he showed a lot of promise, a lot of momentum coming into this year after he missed 3 weeks last year. He really came on the end of the season and finished off the year great. So let's move on to your next receiver you took in the 9th round.
All right. So this is the only part of the draft that got a little murky for me. So the previous round in the 8th, there was a turn. It was the 801-23 turn. And my guy, Darren Waller, had been taken right before me. Yep. So and we'll talk about this on a tight end episode probably, but I'm really high on Darren Waller and on what he could be, barring health, of course, but what he could be this year and for the next few seasons in New
York. He's going to be the number one receiver in New York.
He's by default going to be the number one target getter on that team. Absolutely. So a total mismatch, athletic freak. Yeah, he has been injured, but he looks great this training camp. So I was really set on him. I didn't really see him getting sniped. He did. At that point, I started to think, well, man, I have about 20-some picks before I'm back on the board. I could see a tight end run happening here, and I don't really want to play in a dynasty league. I don't want to play that, you know, I mean, I guess it's not the waivers, but, you know, you're going for, like, the low end, the Higbees and the Gerald right. Everett's of the world. I didn't want to go for that. So I reached a little bit maybe on Dallas Goedert, who I think is great, and we'll get some manufactured touches in Philly. But when that happened, a lot of the receivers I really liked came off the board. You had Hollywood Brown, Deontay Johnson, Godwin, Zay Flowers, Amari Cooper, you know, all these guys, Elijah Moore, who I loved and I thought would fall, also got taken right before me in the next round. So I kind of got left in a tough spot, and that's where I took Mike Williams, who is essentially my de facto, I guess he's my wide receiver 3, a flex in this league because we only start 2 receivers, but we do have 3 flex spots. So it's kind of a unique format. And if I'm just speaking to Mike Williams, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Kellen Moore going to L.A. with Herbert. Herbert's healthy. He doesn't have bad ribs anymore.
Yeah.
Newsflash. And their left tackle's back. Newsflash. And that whole receiver room's healthy, and they have a new OC. So
the offense is going to be completely different.
It's going to be different. They're going to air it out a ton. Yep. There's already been talk about moving Mike Williams around the formation, putting him in the slot. I see him as being a mismatch. And if, you know, it always ends up being down to who's the puppet master? Who's calling the shots? Who's pressing the buttons on your offense? I trust Kellen Moore a lot in the passing game. So, you know, Mike Williams, 28 years old. If they move him around the formation, I think he can give me some good boom weeks. He's never going to be a consistent receiver, but that was what was left. I didn't want to take a Brandon Cooks. I wasn't excited about a Mike Evans with whoever's throwing him the ball this year, whether it's Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask or Arnie. So,
Okay, then we'll go over one more receiver you took. coming back around. In the 11th round, you took Gabe Davis.
Gabe Davis.
You got 100% from Fantasy
Pros. I did. Well, you know, let's look at the trickle-down effect, though. So Gabe Davis as a 24-year-old in one of the most high-powered offenses as the wide receiver, too, at the 11-10.
Yeah, no, I mean, great value.
When you put context on top of it, there's some value there. So, all right, so we'll quickly rehash what happened to Gabe Davis last year. Wide receiver 36. He played 15 games, played injured in others. So he missed two games right off the bat in that offense. He did have the drop issues. He's not a super refined route runner, but he's a great vertical threat on a team that's attached to Josh Allen. Took him as my wide receiver 4. He's very young. I think people overvalued him last season. He was being drafted way too early in redraft leagues. People got excited about that playoff game where he had the 4 touchdowns. I get it. That's what we do as an industry. We get excited. But sometimes you have to dial it back a little bit and understand that there's still value in the guys that aren't sexy, but you have to be able to read the tea leaves around the situation. I think Gabe Davis, I understand Dalton Kincaid's on that team, but he's still the wide receiver, too. They didn't really bring – I mean, Shakir, I believe, is they're going to be their 3 right now. Showed a little bit, but did very, very little in his rookie season.
Yeah.
I just still think he's a guy that'll just sneakily give you 65 catches for 1,000 yards and 8 or 9 touchdowns this year. And as my wide receiver 4, where I have other positions I can rotate into that flex spot, at that point it was a value.
Right.
Because I ended up getting Nico Collins at the 14.03. Who I think is a deep sleeper this year with a C.J. Stroud. So I kind of reinforced it with, I got Cedric Tillman in Cleveland and a couple other guys. So I was pretty comfortable with it. Again, it's not a wide receiver-heavy team. That's what happens when you have Christian McCaffrey and Tony Pollard as your top 2 running backs, too. I mean, you got to pick and choose where you take your shots. But I think what happened was a well-balanced overall team, as evidenced by the Fantasy Pros 100 out of a 100 score. So not that that means everything. It doesn't, but, you know, just a fun little tidbit.
Yeah, that's always fun. You talked about Dallas Goedert on your as your first tight end taken. My first tight end taken, I took Evan Engram, which I think last year, first year in Jacksonville, a great change of pace for him, obviously. Just kind of really just struggled through his time in New York.
Oh, yeah. He was not Darren Waller.
No. No. But I am actually really excited for him this year. Get another season with Trevor Lawrence in that offense. And, I mean, I like just about everybody on the Jaguars offense. I'm trying to get as many pieces of that offense as I can. So.
That's an exciting team. Yeah. No, for sure. And he just signed a big deal. 3-year, I want to say it was 48 or 50 million around in that range. That's off the top of my head. But
3-year, 42.5 million.
There you go. So a legitimate deal. They believe in him. Probably be a little bit of a boomer bust type, but that's everyone not named Kelce or Andrews. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, outside of Dynasty, if I don't get one of the big tight ends early, I honestly stream tight ends.
Yeah.
I just look for matchups.
And that's the difficulty with Dynasty is what I projected there'd be a tight end run after the Darren Waller pick.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. So I just kind of had to live with it. But, you know, it turned out okay.
Yeah. Speaking of streaming, is there any other position you usually feel comfortable with streaming? I mean, we're not playing with a defense in this league. I usually stream defenses. Kickers, if the league has a kicker, I'm streaming.
Sure. We won't talk about that.
We'll leave that out. But no, tight end, if I don't get one of the, you know, the Travis Kelce's, the Mark Andrews along those lines, then yeah, I'm usually going to stream tight ends and just look for those matchups. Look for the teams that have terrible inside linebackers that can't cover tight ends.
Sure. No, I agree.
Okay, guys. Well, that seems about as good as time as ever to wrap this first episode up. We hope that it gave you a good insight into who we are as fantasy managers, as new podcast hosts. We want to remind you to follow us on all of our socials. That's at FF Blackboard on Twitter and Instagram. And by Twitter, I mean X, but I'm going to call it Twitter.
Do you like that?
I hate it. When it first upgraded on my phone or updated on my phone and I just saw this giant X, I was like, what's this app? I don't know what this is. I didn't put this on my phone.
I keep picking it thinking it's Xfinity too. And it's not. So
just trying to watch TV.
Yeah, I'm just trying to watch my shows, man.
But yes, follow us on there. We're gonna be putting out a lot of content pretty regularly, so give us a follow, give us a like, share it, all that stuff. It's gonna be great. We're going to have a couple episodes coming out pretty soon, too, covering individual position players and our rankings on them, diving a little deeper into that stuff. Hope you guys are ready to do that.
Yeah. Great. Excited, guys.
All right. Well, looking forward to it. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.